Hey, what's up, Cub fans? Welcome to episode 139 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis here with Sean Sears. We're looking at a Cubs unfortunate loss on Sunday. A lot of reasons that happened, and we can talk about that a little bit. We'll look ahead at Monday's game. Monday. Did I say that was Sunday? Wow. Labor Day weekend does that to me. Does that do that to you? I totally thought today was Sunday.
I can understand that. And I went to work today, so.
This is Monday night we're recording this. So looking ahead to Tuesday's game, the Cubs against the Brewers, if you're listening to this, that would be today. Mike Montgomery is pitching for the Cubs. Wade Miley on the mound for the Brewers. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about some minor roster discussion of things that happened with the 40-man roster in the second segment. We'll talk about some interesting comments from Cole Hamels, and then we'll update the NL Central. But first things first, how was your Labor Day weekend?
It was good. Yeah, I unfortunately had to work on Labor Day, but I had 4 days off before that, including the weekend. So, I mean, it was pretty solid. I was able to do random fun things that I normally don't. So it was fun. It was a very relaxing weekend. What about you?
Yeah, pretty much the same. And I'm Labor Day weekend is great for the unemployed. Typical stuff. That's why I've totally lost control of what day it is, because my wife and my daughter were home, so it was a Sunday, right?
I mean, that's usually the minimum requirements, right?
But I got to grill burgers and hot dogs for dinner, so it was cool. And then, daughter went to bed. We popped open some wine, watched Better Call Saul. So it doesn't get much better than that. Really, really washes down the bad taste of the Cubs game out of your mouth.
100%.
So to get into it, the Cubs lost 4-3. A whole bunch of things factored into that. Over the final two innings, Cubs relief pitchers walked three batters and hit three batters. I'm pretty sure they didn't allow any hits in those two innings, but they allowed two runs that turned a 3-2 lead thanks to an Anthony Rizzo homer off Josh Hader into a 4-3 loss. The final play of the game, and we'll talk about this a little bit more in a minute, but Chris Bryant fielded a sharply hit grounder at third base, who's maybe a few steps away from third. It was a five-man infield drawn in, pretty much designed to get exactly what you got, the sharp hit ground ball, so you could throw home for the force out and get the out no matter what, and maybe turn a double play. Bryant didn't throw home. He went to third base, tried to throw over to first to get Yelich. Didn't happen. Cubs lost the game. Not the reason the Cubs lost, but it was just one small thing in a series of many small things that turned this possible victory into a frustrating loss. So tomorrow, today, Tuesday, the Cubs play the Brewers again. It's Mike Montgomery against Wade Miley. Miley has a 2.19 ERA for the Brewers in a truncated season, despite peripherals that would suggest he has been worse than that. Miley has gone at least five innings in each of his last seven starts and has allowed three or more runs only twice during that stretch and only once three or more runs earned. So his last start against the Cubs was last July. He allowed seven earned runs in 4 2/3, but obviously it's been very different this year. Montgomery looked good coming off the DL in his last time, but ran out of steam in the fifth inning against the Braves. So let's talk about today's loss a little bit. We can talk about the Bryant play. You watched it right before we came on. I was getting heated comments on Twitter basically saying Bryant absolutely has to throw home on that play. Again, it's not Bryant's fault they lost or anything like that. It's just that's the play. You got to throw home, right?
Yeah, that's kind of how I was feeling. I mean, like you said before, like you put a five-man infield, you drill them in, the play is at home. That's what you have to do, especially with only one out. It would be great. I mean, if it was a slow grounder up the middle, then yeah, you turn the double play. But I think anywhere else, you know, that isn't going towards Javier Baez is what my thought process would be. You don't turn the double play, especially with the way Chris Bryant had to go, and you're just gonna have to pull off an extraordinary play. And Yelich being a left-handed batter, just everything about the play just seemed like you just don't make that. You don't take the risk. Take a look at the screenshot. We talked about Keon Broxton on third. He wasn't even halfway through. He wasn't even a third of the way to home. Like the play at home was there. Honestly, he probably would have had a better chance of tossing it home and hoping, you know, the catcher could get it to first, maybe. But you know, that play, like it's drawn up to come home. It should have gone home.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, Yelich is a good base runner. He's a quick base runner. He's not a burner, but he's fast. He's left-handed. Because of the nature of the way the ball was hit and how hard it was hit, there are four base runners, and only Yelich is the one like off with the swing of the bat. You know, everybody else has to freeze. So if there's one place where you won't be able to turn a double play for sure, almost for sure, it's first base, because that's the guy who's really busting it down the line. Everybody else has to freeze. You have an out at home. You have the out at third. It's very possible, although I, you know, haven't seen the overhead look, so I can't see where Lorenzo Cain was between first and second. It's very possible, because of how he had to freeze on the hit, that Bryant could have ran over to third and then thrown to second for the double play. But yeah, obviously it was a split second thing. He made his decision. He owned up to it after the game, said, you know, he probably should have thrown home. It was the right play. The other point on the other side of it is that Bryant wasn't in a great position to throw home based on where he fielded it and was in that moment. But again, that screenshot we talked about where Bryant has the ball and is basically deciding in that moment he's going to run over to third base, where Broxton is, he easily could have taken two steps to his left, set his feet, thrown it home for the force out, and, you know, just let, you know, let the pitcher go after the next batter from there. So, not a whole lot else to say about this. I guess it's just a frustrating way for a game to end.
Yeah, and like you said, the way it got to that point too, the Cubs, you were right, did not give up both Cishek and Chavez did not give up a hit. It looks like Cishek walked a guy. I know they both hit some people, or I think Cishek hit people. I don't know. Edwards.
Edwards hit, I think, one batter. Walked a couple. So yeah, it was a brutal way to watch the bullpen blow a game, especially guys that you expect to be better than that. The way that Cishek was kind of wild was a bit alarming, especially because he's pitched so much this season. I'd really hate to see, you know, basically the starting pitching, the offense hit their stride, but the bullpen that they've leaned so heavily on throughout the season, to see them, you know, start to falter down the stretch would be really disappointing.
Yeah, that was my thought process through it all. It's scary to think, like, Cishek is a guy who's been nothing but sturdy and reliable. And, you know, we've talked about him on the podcast. I've written about him a few times now at this point this year. He's been, you know, the bullpen MVP for the most part, being able to kind of fill any role for the Cubs. If he's going to start wearing down towards the end of the season, that's not good. Clearly, it's just two sample sizes. You have that rule out of, you give it the walk-off home run in the Friday game with the Phillies, and now this kind of situation. So he wasn't the reason they lost either, but him coming out and not being able to execute is clearly alarming. So maybe you let him relax. You do have plenty of options at this point, but you got to win these games now for sure. These two games.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they only need one. If you finish this series with a four-game lead and you check off the three games, I'm okay with that. Obviously, you want to get greedy and say, take two of three. If they lose Wade Miley against Mike Montgomery, that's not going to be all that surprising. You really just have to win one game. You just can't get swept. You can't leave this series with a two-game lead. That would be, you know, borderline disastrous.
Yeah, that's a great point, especially with the Brewers now. At least coming into today's game, we're in sole control of second place, at least in the division. We're now the wild card spot, just barely above. I think they're a half game above the Cardinals, so nothing big. But the Brewers are kind of pulling it together now, and both teams. I mean, I talked a little bit on the podcast yesterday. The Brewers haven't been necessarily on fire, but they've been winning a ton of series. So they've won their last, I think, four or five series against teams right now. They're playing good baseball. It's just the Cubs are really hot right now. So I'm just hoping that doesn't necessarily translate to the Cubs falling apart and the Brewers picking it up. I don't know. It's a scary thing, especially we'll get through it in the second segment. Some of the comments that were said after the game, you know, just kind of bulletin board material, to be honest.
Yeah, we can get to that in a minute. But last thing I wanted to say about this is that, you know, it is just a frustrating loss. You kind of have to just put it behind you, especially with how well they've been playing lately, and just kind of focus it on, you know, just take, you know, for the Cubs, it's take two out of three, but really in reality, it's just take one out of three. You can live with a four-game lead, especially with the fact that, you know, spoiler alert, the Cardinals lost. So you still have a 5.5 game lead on them. So yeah, the worst case scenario if the Cubs split the next two with the Brewers, it's still going to have at least a 4.5 game lead on the Cardinals. So
that's good. You calm me down a little bit, Ryan. That's good. No, like you said, it is a great point. I mean, the Cubs did do enough, at least in these last couple of weeks, to really kind of get themselves some breathing room, honestly, just some space to work with in this division, which is great, especially when you consider how hot the teams behind them have been too. So they just got to, like you said, you take a game, you still maintain that four game lead over the Brewers. They run into them once more, I think, right? Or is this the last time they see Milwaukee?
They have a series against the Nationals, and then they play the Brewers right again. So, so they leave Milwaukee. I think they have four in Washington. I think it's four. And then they come back home for three with Milwaukee. So it's, right around the corner.
Okay. So, a quick break with the Nationals, then face them again. So if you can just, keep them at bay and execute against these other teams, I think the Cubs could probably – the Cubs would have to have some terrible things happen at this point from the fall part. This is still a team that's pitching and hitting together all at once for the first time in what feels like sometime in 2016. So that's exciting to see. Clearly I'm exaggerating, but it's nice to see this team pull together. Tough way to lose, but I think you can kind of take, maybe not be prideful of the fact this happened, but at least it's nice knowing that you probably caused yourself to lose this game and it was less of the Brewers really willing themselves into this win. So
yeah,
add on that, I guess. But
well, let's go ahead and go to our second segment. We'll talk about at least one of the starting pitchers from this game and some comments he made. And I guess we can talk about really both starting pitchers and how this game kind of shook out and the other reason why it's a little on the frustrating side. So this game was Cole Hamels versus Zach Davies. Davies hasn't pitched since May. So it's been basically 3 months since this guy was out there last. he always seems to pitch well against the Cubs. I don't know what it is about this guy. He's not great. He started 9 games this year and 3 of them have been against the Cubs. And I'm pretty sure those are his only 3 good games of the season. He's coming off the DL. You score the run early on him. You've got him kind of on the ropes, and then you let him shut you down over the next few innings, and you get into the bullpen where Josh Hader comes out and throws 2 2/3. It looks like he's eating you alive. Eventually, you score off him, put yourself in a position where you're going to win, and more importantly, you knock him out for today's game because he threw 35, 36 pitches and then gave up the Rizzo homer. So you're sitting pretty at that point, despite the fact that Zach Davies shut you down. The offense has been much better lately, and you really can't just look at this and be like, well, they still have these blips because it's going to happen to everybody. But the kind of talking point lately that I feel like is, one part, just not necessarily a real thing, and then another part, well, maybe, is the fact that they seem to beat up on these power pitchers. And we talked about this before. Guys with velocity, the better pitchers, DeGrom, Syndergaard, all these other guys that they've started against recently, they've beaten. But then they let Julio Chacin and Zach Davies and these kind of soft tossers just eat them alive. And, you're not going to be facing – it's weird to say. You're not going to be facing all the great pitchers every game. So you're going to have to figure out how to hit these – 89, 90 mile an hour fastball guys.
Yeah. I mean, Davies had 7 strikeouts today, and that's just disappointing because the guy isn't a strikeout guy. He had coming into this game prior to it had, I think, 26 strikeouts to 17 walks in his last 7 starts. Not necessarily killing it in a quarter, when it comes to control, and he was getting hit hard. He was giving up home runs. I thought, honestly, this was a game the Cubs were going to beat up on Davies, especially with Cole Hamels on the mound. It just didn't happen. And like you said, I don't know what exactly it is. I mean, the Cubs love to hit fastballs. We all know that. There's plenty of guys at this lineup that, are looking for the fastball. I don't know why it's so hard to hit these soft tosser guys. I don't know if the teams just know how to execute in those moments. Maybe it's just Davies is having a really good outing or being motivated against the Cubs. Cause like you said, he's had 3 really good starts against them now. But yeah, there's nothing you can really point to than the fact that, the Cubs seem to struggle against guys that, top out at 91 miles an hour. And that just, I don't get it.
Well, the other thing is that you have five more games against the, of your next nine, five of them are against the Brewers. It's the best way to say it. They don't have guys who are going to be, the power 97, 98 mile an hour pitchers. They have a lot of, Julius Chacin, Zach Davies, Chase Anderson, a lot of these guys who are just kind of like hopefully have good control and not walk you and, not strike out a ton of guys. The Wade Miley, there's another one, doesn't strike out a ton of guys, but doesn't walk many. These are the kinds of guys they struggle with. That could be a really bad thing for them over the next few games, next like week or so, I guess.
That's true. It's weird too, because you would think, like, especially the way the season's gone for the Cubs, they aren't necessarily hitting for power. Recently, they've been hitting with a lot of power and been relying a good amount on home runs. They hit four of them, I think, against the Phillies on Sunday. Hit another one today to really, the Rizzo home run was really what, gave this Cubs team this lead and, stole momentum back late in this game. Clearly didn't work out, but they haven't been a team that's necessarily relied too much on the deep home run ball. They haven't been a power hitting team like they have been in past. And you would think maybe some of the higher contact guys and the good on base guys, they would be able to work these counts. And even if they're not getting high contact, or even if they're not getting, on base and scoring runs, at least they're driving up pitch counts, you would think, but they didn't do that either. So it's weird. It's almost like the Cubs don't have a game plan. We know that's not the case. They're a Major League Baseball team. Everyone has a plan coming up to bat. But it just doesn't feel that way. Maybe they just get, or they're getting fooled. Maybe they just seriously across the lineup just have a tough time picking up, slower pitches in the lower hand of the strike zone. So, it definitely is an issue at this point. It's something that the Cubs, across the board against all teams, not just the Brewers, but all teams that have soft tossers, they seem to struggle with. So, you hope it's a blip. You hope it's just, the fact that maybe the Cubs are seeing, this is what, game 17 or 18 of the 23 in a row stretch of games. So maybe they're just getting tired. Luckily, they have the 40-man roster, but they also can't necessarily throw out lineups like they did last week when, Rizzo, Contreras, Baez were all missing from the lineup. So,
yeah. Well, at this point, if they're getting tired from this stretch, that's rough, because I think they have nine more games in a row before they get a day off. I think their next day off is the 13th of September. So, yeah. It's still a while away. They're not going to get any days off anytime soon. The best thing they can do, and I know the AAA season hasn't officially ended yet, so they've waited on calling up basically all the guys they could call up on the 40-man roster, but the best thing they can do at this point, fill up that 40-man roster, fill up the bullpen, get as many of those guys up there as you can, and then just find ways to rest guys. I mean, everyone throws a fit that Addison Russell started today and Victor Caratini started at catcher, but you have to find ways to get these guys games off. You have to do it. You can't just, basically put Baez at short and Murphy at second every single day. You can't start Zobrist every single day. You're going to have to give Bryant an occasional day off here and here and there to rest that shoulder. So you have to find creative ways to get these guys days off during the stretch. Otherwise you are going to end up, oh yay, we have the optimal lineup out there every day, but why aren't they scoring any runs? Well, maybe because they're freaking exhausted.
Yeah, it's just the way it shakes out for the Cubs. Unfortunately, just with the rainouts too, they lose the off day they were supposed to have when they made the makeup game with the Braves last week. Yeah, it's gonna be a rough stretch. And luckily, they have pieces. But like you just said, you can't necessarily just give up a game to trade rest right now. It's two important games right now. You have to be competitive. And it's not like putting David Bodie in third as opposed to Chris Bryant makes this Cubs team any super less competitive, but clearly Chris Bryant's a superstar and David Bodie's been a really productive player. So I don't know. They're in a tough spot. They just kind of have to grind through it. Hopefully they can make it out okay and still in a good standing where they can still make something happen late in the season. So I still think they are. I think it's tough to stay positive when you had a really rough game like today. But the Cubs are still in a good position. Like you were saying before in the first segment, they've still can dictate their destiny, I guess, if the way you want to call it. They still have control of which direction their season's going, and that's all you really need at this point.
Yeah. Before we finish the second segment, two more quick notes. Cole Hamels was asked about the Cubs and Brewers rivalry after the game. His comments, this is a quote from Tony Andracki, what he put on Twitter from Hamels. When you have a majority of Cubs fans in the stands, I don't know if it's a rivalry yet. I've been in rivalries. They're not going to like me for the comment, but you look at the ticket sales, or you can look at the ticket sales, he said. This comment, I think it was Tony who said on Twitter that it was pretty obvious that this was like kind of pre-planned, or at least was thought out well by Hamels before he said it. So I don't know what to even say about those comments other than it just seems really gratuitous. Like I don't know what the point of that is. Coming out and basically trying to spike the football on the Brewers after you just lost to them in a game you probably should have won.
Yeah, it's exactly how I took it as too. It's just kind of like a weird thing to say. I don't know if he's trying to win Cubs fans over. I don't know. Maybe he felt fired up with the Brewers. Maybe he felt some bad blood. I don't really know. He did see Christian Yelich a decent amount when he was with the Phillies a couple of years ago. Maybe he doesn't like Christian Yelich. I don't know. It just doesn't make sense. You know, there's no reason for a team that's already, you know, four games behind you right now, was able to steal one game that you essentially coughed up to them. You know, there's no reason to give these guys bulletin board stuff. You know, there's no reason for them to be able to put a quote from Cole Hamels up on their locker and be like, this guy doesn't respect us. Let's go kick the crap out of their team now. And they're already doing that. They already don't like the Cubs. They're already coming to each matchup being like, we need to kick their teeth in. And now you're just adding more, you know, they're just adding gas to the flames, man. So, you know, the Cubs are confident, and I like to see that confidence, but there was a way Cole Hamels could have said that without coming across kind of like a dick, to be honest. So,
yeah. And I know a lot of Cubs fans were just absolutely loving on it. And, you know, for the fans, I think that's fine. You can enjoy those comments, but in the grand spectrum of it, I don't understand the point of him doing that in the timing. You know, if he says something like that, in a week or so, once you've, you know, or 2 weeks after you've played your last game against the Brewers, or it's that like final series and you've maybe, you know, spread out the distance a little bit, I can totally say like, yeah, sure, say whatever you want. But at this point, like, you say this stuff, you're just asking for them to come out and really, like, I guess there's no better motivator than trying to catch a team in front of you in the standings. But, you know, it's bad optics.
Yeah, and just like of all people to say something to, Cole Hamels, it was probably one of the last people I would have expected to try and mic drop the Brewers. Like, what?
Yeah, that was weird.
It was just like, what is, are you like trying to like be like, look how much I interact with Cubs fans, sign me again next year? I don't know, man. Just peak pitching, Cole. You're already making the case yourself. Don't put your foot in your mouth here, man. Come on.
Yeah, I guess I'd say this. It seems like maybe this is a dude kind of playing with house money right now. like yeah. He just had a good start, like despite the fact he gave up two earned runs in six innings, because those runs were unearned, but then the scoring change was changed because on that stolen base by, I think it was Arcia, where Murphy just totally biffed on catching the ball. It was actually called a balk by the home plate umpire at the time, but nobody noticed. So later, they changed the scoring decision. So Hamels ended up six innings, two earned runs. But, you know, another good game, and this guy's been absolutely outstanding in a Cubs uniform. So I can get after the game maybe still feeling kind of like, you know, he can do no wrong. But, man. we've beat this horse to death, I think, but I just don't understand going after the Brewers and their fans when you still have two games left to play in the series in their home park. I don't understand the thought process.
Yeah, I just didn't get it. You know, like maybe if the Cubs clinch the division and you're kind of feeling yourself there, maybe you make a comment like that, but you got to go play these guys like five more times in like a very short amount of time. Like, why are you pissing them off, man? I guess if you're confident and you trust yourself, I guess, you know, it is what it is, but I didn't like it, and that's about all I can say on it.
Yeah. All right, let's leave that behind. We'll go to our final segment and talk about the other important game from the NL Central tonight. Yeah, I just said tonight. I meant last night, because we're recording this on Monday night, and everyone's listening to this on Tuesday.
You throw me off. Sunday doing it too. I kept saying tonight or yesterday in reference to Saturday or Sunday's game, and I was like, Monday, Sean. It's Monday, Sean.
Yeah, so good news. The Cubs did lose to the Brewers. That's bad, but the Cardinals blew it big time. They're up 3-1 over the Nats on the road in the ninth inning. Here comes Bud Norris with Bryce Harper at the plate and a runner on, I think it was first base. And what happens? Of course, Bryce Harper hits a two-run homer to tie the game. Bottom of the 10th inning, Harper hits a sack fly. Washington wins 4-3. The only other NL Central game going on was the Pirates playing the Reds, and Pittsburgh won 5-1. So standings, Cubs are now 81-56, so back to 25 over 500. Milwaukee is four games back at 78-61. St. Louis at 76-62, still 5.5 back. Pittsburgh 67-71, 14.5 back, while Cincinnati is 59-79, 22.5 games back. So I guess the good news is the Cardinals are still 5.5 back. I mean, that's the positive that you take away from all of this is that the Nationals came back and beat them. It would be nice to see the Cardinals really start to cool off a little bit. And the fact that their bullpen came, you know, have given up games last 2 days. They had a situation where they probably should have won against the Reds 2 days ago. And what they had bases loaded, nobody out in the ninth inning in a tie game and didn't score and then lost the game. So, yeah, you've got the Cardinals who have been red hot, but suddenly are the last few days not playing so well anymore. And it would be really great to see the Cubs bury them and just, you know, finish out this division nicely. My big thing is I just don't want the Cubs to be to not have clinched going into the final series of the season with St. Louis. That would just be like all hell breaking loose.
Yeah, particularly for you since you live in Central Illinois, so you're dealing with the St. Louisians. Is that how you
say it? That's a nice way to say it. I would just say that I don't ever leave my house, so I don't ever deal with them.
That's the smart way. It's like if I could in person do the dude tapping his forehead being like, look how smart you are type of thing gif, I would over in person. I agree with you. The Cardinals are the team I'm still worried about, even with Milwaukee closing in a little bit. I just think if the Cardinals continue to be as hot as they are, they've got batters that can, you know, win games. They've got pitchers that can, you know, shut down teams at times. So they've got the type of players that can make a massive impact in a game, whereas the Brewers have guys that just kind of execute in moments. And, you know, if an opportunity presents themselves, they have players that can maybe do that. Outside of Christian Yelich, really, though, there's no one in the offense that's scaring me too much. No one that really scares me on the mound for the Brewers, outside of maybe Josh Hader with the lead. But, you know, clearly the Cubs showed today that they can beat him too. So, I don't know. The Cardinals are definitely the team I'd be the most scared of. And if they're going to start kind of falling back to where we thought they might be about a month ago, that's great news for the Cubs.
Yeah, I would say that Milwaukee head-to-head is the team that I feel like scares me more, just because I feel like they play the Cubs really well, and maybe just the matchup in general isn't great. Kind of things we talked about before, that they struggle against pitchers who throw 89 miles an hour with a changeup that falls off the plate, and that's like everyone on the Brewers. So it just seems like the Cubs don't match up well, or they don't score runs. I need to go back and look at it. Maybe we can mention it on tomorrow's podcast, but just figuring out the runs per game against the Brewers this year, it has to be less than 3 runs per game, I would think. So the head-to-head there match, the matchup scares me more. The Cardinals just in general scare me just because of who they are and what they tend to do. I would say this about the Cardinals. I think their chances of making the playoffs this year are solid as a wild card, and maybe even playing the Cubs in the NLDS are solid. But going into next year, that team only needs to make a couple of pretty smart moves in the offseason before they're a serious NL Central contender next year. Like a team that I would say, like, not a favorite, but like right there with the Cubs.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think the Brewers are still they need an ace. They need a frontline starter to really be considered that. But yeah, the Cardinals are, they've got pieces, they've got young talent, they've got guys that are contributing now. Harrison Bader apparently is already Mike Trout, according to Cardinals Twitter. they've got some good pieces, and they've got plenty of a talent that you know can make a difference in any type of series and affect multiple teams. It's not just, you know, good matchups against one team like the Brewers here a little bit. The Cardinals are definitely a team I'd be scared for. I mean, they're just a team that I just find annoying and scary in general, just because of who they are, like you said. But yeah, they've got a good team. They really do. And they're not far away from being a very good team.
Yeah. I'll do this. I love doing the thing where I quiz you. Harrison Bader has played 113 games with 337 plate appearances. So that's basically like what? Like 75% of the games, or 75% of like playing time. What do you think his wins above replacement is?
Ooh. Is it like, he's probably close to two. I'd say I'm going to say two.
Oh, you're halfway there. He is four wins above replacement.
Oh my God. What?
He as a defensive center fielder is what most Cub fans think Albert Almora is.
Oh man. I didn't even, wow. He's that good on defense. I knew he was good. I knew he's fast, but wow.
He's fast. He gets good reads. He is just a phenomenal outfielder. I'm probably botching this because there's probably somebody obvious in the National League who's better, but he probably is the best, in my opinion, the best defensive center fielder. I think he probably deserves to win a Gold Gloves this season.
I mean, he's a talented kid. He's going to probably end up being one of the big Cardinal pieces that him and Matt Carpenter will slug out teams in the next couple of years. But wow, I did not know he was that good defensively. Yeah, I'm looking at his stats now. Yeah. Yeah. He's got a 2.2 defensive war according to Baseball. Baseball Reference. Geez, words. It's been a long day, man.
Yeah. So like, I'm not a huge Miles Michaelis guy. Like, he's been good, but I don't see like going into next season, I'm not like penciling him in as like an ace or anything. But Jack Flaherty, on the other hand, he was a top prospect. He's got 11 strikeouts per nine as a starter in 22 games this year. He struck out. This was prior to his start yesterday, but 149 strikeouts and 122 and a third innings. That guy's he's going to be your number two or number three starter, and that's pretty scary. You're going to have Carlos Martinez in there. Other guys. Michaelis, Martinez, Flaherty, and then, you know, whoever's healthy of like Michael Wacha, Adam Wainwright, Luke Weaver. You also have these other young guys like Daniel Ponce de Leon and Austin Gomber. You have some decent pitchers here, and I think they're going to fill out a really solid five-man rotation. If they can get a couple decent bullpen arms, or just get a decent season out of some bullpen guys, and then on the offensive side, maybe add something around guys like Carpenter and Paul DeJong and Jose Martinez, Marcell Ozuna, you get a couple other decent players, like get a third baseman. I feel like that's a team that is 90 to 95 wins.
Yeah, the Cardinals just seem like the team that's been waiting for Josh Donaldson to come play for them. I don't think Josh Donaldson currently, as he exists right now, is the piece that changes everything for the Cardinals, but that type of player is what they need. They need just like a solid – I feel like they've always missed this, just like a good hitter. I feel like they have like power hitters. They have guys that can flap the ball around, maybe get on base. They've never had like – since Pujols has left, really, never had like – this really good hitter. Carpenter's probably been the closest thing to it, but he's still not. I mean, I think you could probably call him a superstar. He's at least a franchise player, but they just don't have that guy that's like your clear third hitter, middle of the lineup guy that goes in and constantly hits 300, gets on base, great, hits 30 home runs. Maybe Carpenter is that guy this year. Maybe that's who he is forever. But it just seems like they lack that one guy. If they were to add that to the lineup, I would be scared of that Cardinals team for sure.
Yeah, and even Carpenter, like he's having his career year this year, but he's 32 years old, so he'll be 33 next year. So he's coming out of the prime years. Do you expect that he kind of repeats this? I don't know. Just looking at his OPS pluses over the last few years. So 2013, when he was 27, like really getting into his prime, it was 140, then 112 in 2014, 135, then 136. Last year it was 120. Batted 241 with a 384 on base, 451 slugging. He had 23 home runs. You know, this is a guy who was a decent player, but not like, he was good offensively, but Not really great defensively. Last year he had 2.9 wins above replacement in basically a full season. So he was just a good role player that had a good back out on base. That's really all he was. This year, a totally different story. 5.3 wins above replacement, leading baseball in OPS at 962. So obviously an outstanding year. And as much as Cub fans don't want to hear it, probably the National League MVP.
Yeah, I would say at this point he probably is. Even if the Cardinals don't make the postseason, it's tough to maybe him or Freddie Freeman. I think it's pretty obvious at this point Carpenter's had the better season, or at least the more impactful season.
Yeah. Yeah, just basically the only thing that could save a guy like Baez would be like a really big tear that he goes on at the end of the year. Maybe a guy like Carpenter, you know, stays cold. Even just thinking about, like, you know, Carpenter's last like 2 weeks, he hasn't been as hot as, you know, previously, but even over his last 2 weeks, you know, like .280 batting average, over .400 on base, .881 OPS. So, I mean, like, even during his downtime, he's been good. So it's not like he's falling off the ledge or anything.
Yeah. Has been more mild salsa than hot salsa. That's for sure.
Well, we don't have to talk anymore about the Cardinals. I know this last segment's probably making a lot of Cub fans dry heave, but, yeah, if I had an MVP vote, and I never will, I'd probably have to swallow my Cubs pride and vote for Matt Carpenter this year, I think.
Yeah, like you said, there's not too many qualified candidates. Carpenter's easily been the most important player to his team, at least in this season for, you know, in the National League. I would say Carpenter probably gets it hands down at this point without, you know, like you said, barring anyone having a really cold spurt or really hot spurt in the last couple months, or I guess a couple weeks of baseball. There's no more months of baseball left, huh? But yeah, I think it's Carpenter.
Man, just look at that. What would that Cardinals offense be without him? Think about it that way. I mean, good God, the rest of that team is just brutal.
Yeah, I mean, God, and to think how much money they sunk into Dexter Fowler, and he's turned into this player. I mean, I expected regression. I did not expect him to be a completely different player. But
yeah, I mean, you know, Jose Martinez is a good offensive player. Jed Jerko, when he's healthy, is a decent offensive player.
Yeah.
Paul DeJong is having a poor season, but he's got a bat that could probably rebound from this. Colton Wong has never been outstanding offensively. Man, it's like Matt Carpenter, and then I guess Jose Martinez is good, but everyone else is either average or below average. So yeah, I think that makes a really strong case for him as the MVP.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. His surrounding cast is not great. It's pretty much Carpenter and a bunch of guys. That's about it.
But Javi Baez is great too. He's having an absolutely outstanding season, and he'll get MVP votes, and he deserves them as well. But just speaking realistically, just looking at the stats, looking at the facts of the situation, it seems pretty clear that at this point it'll probably be Carpenter, unless, you know, the final month of the season sees something, you know, a dramatic shift, like Baez hits, you know, 9 home runs and, you know, puts up a OPS of 1,000 plus, you know, that could change things, but it's hard to see that happening.
Yeah. Quickly before we go, did you see the White Sox walk-off winner today?
I did not, no.
Looks like Matt Davidson hit a walk-off home run, but Yolmer Sanchez, as like Davidson was rounding third to come to home, and all, you know, the Sox are, you know, getting ready to pile on him at home plate, Yolmer Sanchez ran from the dugout with a Gatorade container, dumped it on himself, and then ran through the guys at home plate.
What is he doing?
I don't know. It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. It just, like, and like no one even acknowledges him too. He just like does it, dumps Gatorade on himself, runs in front of Davidson to beat him to home plate, and everyone just like ignores him.
That's really weird.
Yeah. He does weird stuff like that all the time, I guess. But yeah, I just had to share that. Too funny.
Last note before we go, the Cubs had DFA'd a couple guys off their 40-man roster. News came out today. Rob Zastrzewski and Corey Mazzoni cleared waivers and were sent back to AAA. Luke Farrell, I'm sorry to say, claimed by the Angels.
I think we'll live. Yeah. Luke Farrell has been good. He'd been okay in Iowa. He had that really bad start for the Cubs against the Diamondbacks, but yeah, I think we'll survive.
What will Joe Maddon do in extra innings now?